You're listening to Invited In with Christine Boyle, where disability and faith meet. Here's your host, Christine Boyle. You are invited in.
Hey guys, well thank you so much for being with me today. I am so pumped because today is my first time having a guest. So you guys get to be a part of that. I'm really excited because this is a friend of mine, someone that has just been a source of encouragement to me as a mom, and someone who just, he's kind of famous in the world of disability. So I'm super excited that this is my first guest. So let me introduce you to Ryan Wolf. Ryan is the president of Ability Ministry, which just wants to serve adults with disabilities and also comes alongside churches if they're wanting to start disability ministries. He has so much to offer in the world of disability, has so much experience. And so we're just going to talk today. We were just getting ready to jump on and start recording, and we both agreed, like, let's just keep it casual, have a conversation, and you guys are invited in to be a part of that. So Ryan, thank you so much for being my first guest and being on Invited In, where disability and faith meet. I know this is a passion of yours, and so you were the first person that came to my mind of who do I want my first guest to be? So thank you so much.
Yeah. Absolutely. And no pressure, right? First guest. I gotta set the bar somewhere. Hopefully it's not too low, but yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad to join you and just have a conversation about disability and faith and lots of other things.
Yes. That's so awesome. Thank you so much. So this is a question I'm kind of dying to know because I've never had this conversation with you before. What is your why? Why do you care about people with disabilities? What's your backstory that has given you this passion for this community?
Oh, for me, I guess my story is a little bit different than most people that work in disability ministry or in the field. I didn't come into the ministry with like a family member, loved one with a disability. So like I was kind of the outsider. Coming into the party that is disability ministry. And for me, it's just one of those things. It's super simple. It's a calling from God. And you know, so many other people going to, you know, Christian colleges and different things would always, you know, say, I feel like God's calling me to be a youth pastor. God's calling me to be a senior pastor. And for me, I think I floundered a little bit coming out of like Christian college and then going to graduate school because I didn't really have it figured out. And part of me not having figured it out is because there's no such thing as a degree in disability ministry. But I always felt kind of that calling from God, like God was shaping me, directing me to be a disability ministry pastor of, you know, at the time there was no such thing. So it was just kind of a process of me, you know, just kind of tracing the fingerprints of God on my life, just the, who he surrounded me with, growing up. And, again, not a personal, family member, but just so many friends at my church where I grew up, that had disabilities. And, so it was just, God directed me in a path, and now that I look back on it, obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but just it was a path that God put me on. God's, you know, called me to this ministry, even though he called me at a time when the ministry really didn't exist, you know, professionally, you know, there was nobody. So I'm just excited, you know, just to be a part of what, you know, it's, I think it's a party. It's the funnest ministry, in any church to be a part of. So, yes. But yeah, I kind of came to it as an outsider, you know, without a loved one. Yeah. I credit God.
So what year is this? What year is this that you've graduated from college and you're thrown into the world then of disability?
So I graduated with my undergraduate degree in 1998. Then I did go on and I did get a master's degree in counseling, Christian counseling. So I came out of that in 2002. But then I went straight into ministry in the local church setting in 2002. So, wow. and for me, it was a privilege because I got to come home. Most pastors never get the privilege of being a pastor at their home church. But that's where I started. So I came back, you know, master's degree.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I came back to Canton. So I still live in Canton, Ohio, but, graduated with a master's degree in Christian counseling from Cincinnati Christian University, which is no more, unfortunately. But came home and didn't get a job in counseling. I applied to a bunch of counseling agencies, never worked out for whatever reason. Actually, for the reason I think that God had for me. But First Christian called, and back in 2002. They said, "Hey, we're looking for a children's pastor. Would you be interested?" And absolutely was interested. You know, I did some Christian education was my minor in my undergraduate degree. Religion was my major. I got to come home, start off as the children's pastor, and then became the family pastor there. And the whole time, you know, disability ministry was kind of under my umbrella, even though it wasn't like a formalized ministry at the church at the time. But God just kind of continued to grow that. And I've got so many stories just about how that came to be. So for me, I guess the journey started really when I trace it back to when I was probably a teenager at First Christian Church in Canton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. First Christian has had a class for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities for over 40 years, which is insane.
Wow.
So there,
that is insane.
It is. And so there, like growing up there, there was always 10 to 12. That was probably all the bigger the class ever got. Adults with intellectual developmental disabilities. And as a teenager at First Christian, they were people like I had never seen or encountered anywhere else in my life. Going to school in the 80s, the class, you know, special education was separated from all the other kids. Never encountered someone that looked different, walked different, talked different than I did at school or any other sector of my life. But when I went to church every Sunday, there was this group of adults, you know, 10 to 12 of them that walked different, talked different, acted different. And for me, I was like, I was so intrigued by that. And for my experience, I guess, was a little different as a teenager. I took the initiative to get to know these amazing adults at my church and became good friends with them, sat with them at church sometimes, hung out with them in the lobby. So again, as I look back, like God was preparing me, through these relationships with these adults with some intellectual developmental disabilities back at my church in the 80s and early 90s. And then coming back to be able to work there in 2002 and to be able to kind of wrap my arms around some of my friends and say, "Hey, there's no formal ministry for you, but I'd love to, you know, be a part of whatever's going on, whatever God's doing." So, yeah, a little bit more backstory on that.
Yeah. So when you say you took the initiative as a teenager, I mean, literally, you initiated that. Like there was nobody, there wasn't a youth pastor kind of encouraging you guys, your peers, and you to engage in that community. I mean, this was something you did totally on your own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And and part of it.
That's remarkable.
And again, part of it was just my friends were just, they were so, and I don't mean the word to be bad, but they were just so different than anybody else that I've ever experienced. I was like, I've got to get to know these people. For example, back at our old church, before we moved, there was a balcony, and you know, all the teenagers always sat in the balcony, and so did the class. At the time, the class was called the Lifestyles class, and they've changed their name probably 3-4 okay. times, but they sat in the balcony too. And so the row of adults with intellectual developmental disabilities, and then all the youth group teenagers sitting in the balcony. And one guy in particular, he fell asleep during a sermon, and he was like laying on his arm. And and you know how it is. You wake up, you've got like pins and needles. Like, so he's got like, he wakes up and he like grabs his hand because it's not moving. And he starts yelling in church. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like this is awesome. Like I'm a teenager. I'm like, this is so cool. And then he starts dropping an F-bomb. He's like, F my hand. And it was just like, so it was like, it was wild. And it was like, that sealed the deal for me. Yes. I'm like, anybody that can, you know, scream the F word in the middle of a sermon, like I got to get to know this person. And so yeah, it took the initiative. So I'd see him kind of hanging out in the lobby. There was a couple guys that were like big time into sports. Obviously I'm a huge Cleveland sports fan. So like they're always wearing like Indians, Browns, and Cavs gear. So like I would just check in and say, hey man, you think the Browns are going to win today? And just start up a conversation like that. Just that simple. Got to know so many of them. And then full circle coming back to First Christian, I've ended up, you know, I married a couple of them, and I've buried several of them. So just kind of that full circle thing that God prepared me for, as a teenager. But yeah, it was just that attraction of like, these folks are, different. And again, I don't mean different in a bad way. But they were like people like I'd never met before. And I was just like, I got to get to know these people. These people are so fun. They seem to have no filters. I love that. So that's just kind of how it started for me.
Oh, that's so, so awesome. So it makes me think of this generation. And, you know, in the ministry I work for, Young Life, we try to invite kids without disabilities in to be a part of Capernaum, which is our ministry for students with disabilities. And I have been blown away at the kids that have come and have been a part of our ministry. And sometimes I'm just like, I want to ask them, like, why do you keep coming? What is it about this that you love? But then I don't want to scare them away. So I don't usually ask. I just am like, they're here. This is awesome. But I feel like this generation is wired how you were, and just this kindness, this attention to differences, keeping people included, giving them places of belonging. Do you feel like you're seeing that in a different, I just feel like what you're describing you were back then is so remarkable for that time period, right? But like, do you feel like you're seeing a change? I know you have kids and do you feel like it's just looking different in the world of disability, whether it's, you know, in the world, in the church, just this generation of teenagers, I feel like is less scared is.
I could not agree more. And I would trace it back to integration in schools. I think that's where it's happened. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, like I went to school in the 80s, 90s, there was no integration. And then shortly after that, you know, you started to see some integration. And I think it was a bumpy road for a while. But I think the longer people have been integrated, the more normalized, I guess, the situation of just sharing life together from the time that you're young in school, to the time, you know, that you become, you know, young adult and adult, it's becoming more natural. And I think that's an awesome thing. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's kind of the evolution of integration, which starts, unfortunately, a lot of times starts in schools and church follows. But I'm thankful for however we've gotten there, but I totally see that. I see it with my kids and obviously I thank my kids, maybe a bit different than most kids just because of my profession, my life. I totally agree.
Sure.
It's become more natural. It's become more normal. You're just embracing each other because you're sharing that space together every day in school. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like, it makes me always remember, as scary as it can be to invite kids without disabilities in, they're looking for places of belonging as much as our friends with disabilities are. And sometimes what I've seen is like these kids without disabilities come to life around our friends with disabilities because they can let their guard down. They can just have fun, be themselves. If you're listening to this and, you know, you have teenagers in your life or in a position of ministry or education in special ed or something, I feel like just invite kids without disabilities in. They will surprise you and rise to the occasion and love, you know, people with disabilities in ways that some of us can only wish we could, you know? So,
Yeah. I think so much of it is, it's just the lack of filters and just instant acceptance that you receive oftentimes from the disability community that you don't get elsewhere. It's just something that's so attractive from all sectors of life. Like, people just want to be accepted for who they are. And you find that so much more in the disability community than you do outside. So yeah, invite people. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me about, so your time at First Christian, it was, I think you had told me like 15 years you served there, which is amazing and a long time to kind of stick with it. I know ministry is hard for people. But I also know that you kind of transitioned and there was a day program that started, but kind of maybe just share a little bit about, you know, the programming that you did at First Christian, what that looked like, because I know I came and visited your church and did a tour with you at one point. And I mean, it was the little ones to the old, you know, people with disabilities. So maybe just share what that looked like and how that evolved. And then if you want to touch on the day program, because that was just...
Yeah. So like there's so many things that I could say, but kind of what I mentioned before, the story for First Christian, and every church has a story when it comes to individuals with disabilities. But our story, again, it started with a small class of adults over 40 years ago. So our ministry started with adults instead of kids. I think what you see in most churches will start a disability ministry with children, but I recognized pretty quickly, you know, they didn't start as adults with disabilities, they started as kids with disabilities. So just started working with, this was probably 2 years in, so I started in 2002, around 2004, gathered together a group of parents that had kids with varying disabilities that had an interest to get something started. So we started with, you know, it was probably four families that had four different kids. And that's where our ministry with children started. So we decided, hey, we recognize that disability ministry is not like it's not a silo ministry. It's a whole church ministry. It's a cradle to grave ministry. If we're not doing something for every age group, we're missing something. So we started small with that group of about four families with about four kids. We called it the Shine Ministry. This was, again, back in about 2004. So we kind of grew from there. And, you know, we always had done integration because that's all we had done. So we had our ministry, the Shine Ministry, which was a standalone classroom. And then we had integration. Then we had our adult class. And then I just started leaning in as I moved from being the children's pastor into becoming the family pastor, where I oversaw both children's ministry, youth ministry, family ministry. I got a little bit more freedom on Sunday mornings where I wasn't like tied to just doing children's ministry. And with that freedom, naturally, I went to the place that I loved the most, which was the adult class. So I started hanging out in the adult class on Sunday morning and just starting to, you know, to deepen those relationships with them. And God really put it on my heart to say, okay, you know, we got a handful of adults, we got a handful of kids, but certainly there's got to be more people in our church and in our community with disabilities. So God kind of just put that on my heart and he just said, okay, go find them. You know, they're in our community somewhere. So I started setting up meetings with every community leader that I could find in the disability community. I would either take them out to lunch or invite them to the church for a meeting. And I had a one sentence agenda. And it was this, I just sat down with the community leaders. I said, how can we be a blessing to the disability community? No strings attached. And that was my entire agenda as I sat down with community leaders and I started hearing some different things from different community leaders. And then I just decided, you know, we're going to take that list that we developed and, we're just going to start doing stuff. So for example, we met with, the Stark County Board of DD Superintendent Bill Green. And at the time, this was early to mid 2000s. And he said, you know, we've got some budget cuts coming. We're going to have to drop from doing like 10 social events to 12, or I'm sorry, from 12 social events a year to down to 10. Would you be willing to step in and do a social event for us? So I was like, okay, there's a need in the community. Absolutely. So I was like, what's a social event look like? Cause I'd had no idea. And he said, typically it's, you know, we rent out a hall and get a DJ and there it is, that's your event. So I was like, okay, we can do that 10 times better. And so that's where we started our proms. We have done, I think, over 12 different proms over the years now. And that's where it started. It started with a conversation with a community leader that said, hey, we've got this need. Can you do that? So we started, that was our first prom. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know if we'd get 50 people, you know, I'd probably been happy with 50 people. We had 250 people come to our first prom, and it was that moment that like really opened my eyes and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much bigger than I could have ever imagined. And it was, what was amazing was we had our prom on Saturday night. We had 250 people there and, took the stage for just a real brief moment. And I said, hey, I'm so glad you guys are here. You may not know this, but we have an adult class, a Sunday school class on Sunday mornings and you're all invited. So you remember I said, you know, we had this class, 10 to 12 adults, this Sunday morning after our first prom, the attendance went from 10 to 30.
Wow.
So 20 new people showed up and it was just, I was just blown away by that. And so instantly that class had to move from the room that they were meeting to a new room. I just, you know, kept asking questions, you know, how can we be a blessing, no strings attached? And it was more community based than it was kind of church based. And found out that, you know, the Stark Public Royal Knights, and Stark DD needed a baseball field to play on. So I thought, you know, we've got all this extra property, at our new church facility. Why don't we just build them a baseball field? And, that was what we did. I raised $50,000 in less than 12 months, built a baseball field and became the home, you know, baseball field for several of these teams. We would have, I think it was about 6 nights a week.
Wow.
We had 2 different teams come in and play on our field, on our property. And you know what happens over time, you know, you start to see people trickle in from the baseball leagues into the church and it starts to grow the ministry. I kept asking the question, you know, what can we do to be a blessing? No strings attached. And I got a phone call. Check this out. As we started becoming more known in the community, you know, we've got the baseball field, we're doing the dances, you know, we've got the classes, we've got, you know, different things going on. The judge, Judge Dixie Park, calls me on the phone. She introduces herself and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. I don't know what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't often get a phone call from a judge. She picked up a newspaper article when we opened up our baseball field. She's like, you're doing such a great thing at First Christian. I'm wondering if you could help. So here it was, like, I'm asking people, how can we help? And here's a community leader that came to us and said, we need your help. She said, we've got around 60 adults in Stark County, that don't have a guardian.
Wow.
Their families have left, died, or disowned them, and they have no one to speak up for them. Is there anything that your church could do? And I'm like, absolutely. My heart's broken instantly. And I'm like, yeah, we'll develop a volunteer guardianship program. And that's what we did. And we got guardians for over 20 different people in our community.
Wow.
Which was awesome.
Awesome.
So again, meeting those needs. And then I continue to have conversations with different leaders in the community. And this is where Bill Green and I became pretty good friends, still good friends to this day. And he said, okay, our community is going through another transition. This was at the time when they still had a workshop on campus, and he said, you know, we're closing down the workshop, as you know, all workshops mm-hmm. have been closed down pretty much. And he said, we're trying to push people into the community. He said, I recognize the fact that our community could really benefit from having a religious adult day program, you know, wow. a Christian adult day program as an option for our community, wow. because we're pushing people in the community and they don't all have a place to go. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I have no idea how to do that. but I'm like, if it's a need in the community, we'll figure it out. And, it was kind of the point. So I'm doing family ministry. I'm adding all these different things that are all needs in the community to kind of my plate of what I'm doing. And I came before the leadership team and I said, yeah, I really feel like God's calling us to start an adult day program. I have no idea what that means. You know, it's a 5 day a week thing. Wow. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this and do family ministry. So I'm like, it's coming to the point where I'm like juggling two full-time jobs. And it was at the time, Scott Rosen was the lead pastor at First Christian. And man, I'm so thankful for Scott. Scott said, Ryan, I just want you to choose, you know, choose which one you want to do. He said, the choice is yours. Mm. It came at a point in time where our church was going through some financial struggles. And he said, I want you to know, if you choose to be, you know, the full-time disability ministry pastor, we're going to treat you like a missionary. You're going to have to raise your funding. And that, so like, that was like terrifying to me. So it's like, stay the family pastor. We got you. Become the disability ministry yeah. pastor, which there is none in the country. You're going to need to raise your funding because we don't have money to add a new position. And it was like in that moment, I'm like, everything became real to me. I'm like, I had no choice. Wow. Like, I knew what God was, you know, the path he had put me on. And I just said, you know, if this is what God wants for me, he's going to make a way yes. for it to happen. And long story short, you know, we opened the day program with so much help from different people, different key people. You know, I'd be at fault if I didn't, you know, throw out kudos to Sarah Heckert, you know, who was my first program director there. I couldn't have done it without her. You know, God gave me the vision for it, but she was the hands and feet that made it work. So, you know, God brought the right people at the right time. And, we opened up our day program. Now, again, it's been over 11 years ago.
Wow.
We opened it up with two employees, myself and Sarah, and four clients, you know, four friends that were started with us. And, over time, I'm not sure when you saw it, but it grew to the point where it was almost 100 people before COVID hit. It's
okay.
Yeah, it was almost 100 people before COVID hit, and then, you know, it's growing back. Mm-hmm. It's called First Christian Day Services. Still open. You can still find it if you go to firstchristian.com. You can look at the Disability Ministry tab and find out more about First Christian Day Services. But yeah, God made a way, and believe it or not, because we're Medicaid funded, we generated enough revenue to cover 100% of my expenses as the disability ministry pastor. So yeah, that was an amazing thing that God did and developed. And just every ministry, you know, whether it be the prom, whether it be guardianship, mm-hmm. whether it be baseball, whether it be Sunday morning, just kind of grew exponentially, and God blessed even through some of the difficult times at First Christian. I still volunteer and teach on Sunday mornings with the adult class, even though I'm not on staff there anymore. And this past Sunday, check this out. This past Sunday, we had 109 people in our adult class on Sunday morning.
Oh, wow.
And which just, it blows me away, because the average size of the American church is 60 people. So we're almost twice as big as the average size of a church in America, wow. just in our adult class. So God's been so yeah. good. Yeah.
It has to be unheard of to have those kind of numbers. in disability ministry, you know, just for adults too. I mean, that's wow. Wow. So the guardianship piece, like my heart, like just went crazy when you said that, because, so I'm a guardian to my dad who is disabled and schizophrenic, and I've been his guardian since, gosh, it's probably been about 12 years. And I'm his daughter, you know, and it's a joy to get to do it, but I'd be lying if I didn't say it's hard and it's a commitment and it's a huge responsibility. And so, the fact that you have people who did this volunteer guardianship, I mean, how did you get people? I mean, there's family members that won't do that for a family member, right? Like, how in the world did you get people to even want that or give themselves like that?
I just think, again, it was the way that God kind of organically grew our ministry, you know, starting with just the, you know, two small classes and just grew things. And people became attracted to what we were doing and wanted to be a part of it. And as needs arose, I had the opportunity to share with our leadership team, you know, our volunteer team, say, hey, man, this is another big need in our community. You know, it might not be for everybody, but if there's a handful of people that would be willing to step up, we could make a big difference in our community. And we did. You know, we didn't have like a ton of people that stepped forward to do it, but there were several that did, and several took on not just one person, you know, to be their guardian, but some took on as many as five different people to be their guardian. And what we found was like, this is like the perfect, this is like the perfect volunteer opportunity to do, because it doesn't compete with any other system on Sunday morning. So many times we fight for volunteers, but like, this is 100% outside of Sunday morning. And this is just one of those things where like, you go out into the community, you visit somebody, whether it be once a week, once every other week, you're checking in on their needs. Maybe you do lunch with them, you know, once a month, something like that. So it's not like a high, heavy need. Just also to let you know, to make it more doable, we decided to become guardian of person, not guardian of estate. So we didn't get into like the financial side of things, because I think if we said, hey, you're going to become the, you know, guardian of a state and stuff like that, was scared a lot of people away, just not feeling like capable of doing that. So becoming the guardian of person, just making sure everybody's needs are being met. They're in a safe place where they're being loved. And, you know, just to be able to do things like, I know one of our guardians went into a facility where their ward was living, and like, he saw them in the same outfit every single time he visited, you know, dirty pair of sweatpants, dirty sweatshirt. And he's like, why do I always see, you know, so-and-so in the same clothes? I know he has money. And it was like, that's just such a small example, but like how a guardian stepped in. And the next time he came, he had a whole like wardrobe of stuff in his closet. And it was just like just small things like that. And, you know, there are other situations that were like more dire, where people had to be moved out of where they were living into some place where they were more safe. But yeah, guardianship became just such a special thing. And that was another thing, like, where I have had the honor of burying several people who have passed that we have been guardians of. Like, it's just one of those things where, again, I think what hooked a lot of people was when I shared with my volunteers the fact that these folks that don't have somebody to be a guardian for them, what happens when they die? What happens when they pass away? They get cremated and they get put in a box and they never have a funeral. And no one ever comes, you know, to pay them respect, celebrate their life. And I'm like, that shouldn't be, like, that cannot be, People deserve so much more than that. And it was just like that, that sobering reality, I think, was enough to get some people to jump on board and say, hey, we can do something. And like I said, there've been a handful of funerals where it's me officiating the funeral. It's the guardian, you know, that stepped up as a volunteer through the church, and maybe one other staff member or no other people. And it's just been the two of us, but it's what people deserve. People deserve the right to be treated with dignity and respect. Yes. And to have a funeral, to have a burial.
So that was just
one of those things. And if people are interested in starting a guardianship program, we've created a resource at Ability Ministry, where you can download some resources for free on how to get that started. We've done a training on that. So again, you can download that for free at abilityministry.com and figure out how you can do that for your church.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. That's good to know. That's amazing. And you know what I was thinking too, that, I mean, just being a mom and caring diligently, lovingly for my kids over the years, and I'm sure you'll be able to relate to this, it stands out in the world of disability. When you treat someone with dignity and respect, when you're just loving them, caring for them well, like the world is watching, you know, we're talking mm-hmm. about guardianship. So we're talking about probate court and magistrates being involved, things like that, right? Like they know when someone is loved and cared for. And I think of, you know, the things that have been said to me and my husband over the years, just because people recognize when, man, you're doing this out of joy, you're doing this out of love. And I just can't help but think like, how you all have just showed the people that you have worked with, you know, in the secular environments, Jesus, like you have shown the love of Christ in an amazing way that I can't even imagine what a magistrate at probate court is thinking when someone's like, I'm just from their church and I'm just doing this because I heard about this need, you know? And I mean, do you have any like a story about that or something of just like someone in the world just being blown away by who does this?
Absolutely. I'll give you two stories real short. And both of them are related to the baseball field that we built.
Okay.
And before we built the baseball field, it was another one of those things where we were meeting needs in a community and where we found out that the Challenger Baseball League was short on coaches. Almost every single Challenger Baseball team was coached by a parent. And so the parent doesn't get the chance to sit back and just enjoy mm-hmm. the game mm-hmm. because they have to coach, because if they don't coach, there's no team.
Yep.
So we're like, okay, we're like, you know, we got people that love sports, that can coach. So that's where that started, we recruited just a handful of people to go coach, in Challenger Baseball. So the conversation that we would have almost after every game is because like you said, you know, disability community is really tight knit. People take notice when you care well for people. We were showing up, we're coaching.
Yes.
Nobody knows who we are because we're not connected to the disability community at all. Like, what are you doing here? Like, where's your child with a disability? And we're like, you know, we don't have one. We're from First Christian, you know. So people would come up to us after the game and legit just walk straight up to us and say, why are you here? almost suspicious. We just want to coach so you can watch and be a mom or be a dad in the stands cheering for your kid. That's it. No other reason. We're just here to create that opportunity for you.
Yeah.
So that's just one example, you know, just and repeatedly being asked like, why are you here? And they just say, hey, we're from the church and we just want to be a blessing. Yeah. And then, you know, as things developed over the years and the need for the field became something that we wanted to tackle, and we did. We had a family, pretty prominent in the disability community. The dad came up to me and he said, I'm not the type of guy that goes to church. And he said, But any church that's willing to do all the things that you have done for my family, because he had a son with a disability, he said it's something that I need to check out. And he started coming. And here's a guy that would, you know, your stereotypical guy that would golf on Sunday mornings, because that's his time to have to himself. He starts coming on Sunday mornings. And then amazingly, you know, we baptized the whole family. And it all came out of the fact that we had a handful of people that were willing to go coach Challenger baseball that stuck out like a sore thumb because they didn't have any kids in the league. They were just there to be a blessing, to give parents an opportunity to sit in the stands and cheer instead of having to coach, pitch, you know, be on first base, you know, all those different things. So, yeah, just those are a couple of my favorite stories, just on how God's willing or how God's able to bless abundantly when we're willing to step out and attempt to be a blessing to the community.
Yes. And you're meeting such practical needs. And this is a, you know, such a marginalized group that has so many needs. I mean, there's no denying it. And I think the thing, you know, I feel like I'm hearing and thinking as you're sharing all of this is just like, we need to do better at just making these needs known.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I mean, just, I think, again, kind of going back to what we said about teenagers kind of entering in when they're invited, like, no one's going to know about guardianship unless you present that there's a need, there's a deficit, right? And so that, you know, being in ministry, being a believer, like, that just reminds me, like, we have to make those needs known. Otherwise, the world is going to have no clue. The church is going to have no clue what the needs are and how to meet those needs. But wow, that's incredible. So, you know, you did so much at First Christian. What, and obviously, like you said, their program's been involved, you know, started 40 years ago. I mean, tell me about the leadership. I mean, what conversations were like in meetings and just, was everyone on board? I mean, was just the DNA of First Christian? Is this just the heartbeat of that church? Or was there a lot of advocacy coming from you? Like, what was that like?
It was a mixed bag of everything. Yes, obviously I was consistently advocating that the church do more. And as I was being made aware of needs, I kept presenting them to the church and said, "Hey, I think this would be awesome. Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this?" And most time, thankfully, the leadership said yes. And at one point, you know, it wasn't all, you know, unicorns and rainbows along the way. I did have one leader, that said these words to me. He said, "Ryan, I think you're doing an awesome job. I love what you're doing." He said, "But you know what? When I see people with disabilities, I walk to the other side of the hallway just because, like, I don't know what to do." He said, "So I'm going to," these were his words. He said, "I'm going to cheer you on from a distance." So you have some of that. Like, as I look back even further, you know, we had, you know, certain people that, you know, saw a child on the autism spectrum that was having a difficult time on a Sunday morning. And, you know, I had to walk out of service. And you've got a wife of a prominent staff member at the time. A wife said, like, "Well, that was my," and she said it really loud in the lobby, "If that was my child, I'd whoop them and teach them how to, you know, behave in church." So wow. Again, it wasn't all, you know, unicorns and rainbows along the way. It took some advocacy. Sure. It took some education, on my part. I think one of the biggest things, that helped First Christian helped me was the fact that I had a seat at the lead team table. I was on the leadership team. I think if I was not on the leadership team, I don't think we would have made the progress that we did. I do think that disability ministry has somewhat of a ceiling, and that ceiling is based on leadership buy-in. So the fact that I had a seat at the table made things so much easier. If you don't have someone who is a champion for the ministry that has a seat at the table, it can be really difficult. And I've coached a lot of people through some of that and just trying to how to overcome some of that. And sometimes there is no overcoming it, which is really difficult and frustrating. I think a lot of it happened because of position.
Yeah. And I guess like staying on that topic, and this leads into, you know, ability ministry and what you're doing presently, the way you're trying to equip churches and help them to get things like this started. How do you get leadership to buy in? What do you say to the people who are coming to you? I mean, is it typically churches that are coming to you and asking for your assistance? Is it families? I mean, tell us about ability ministry and what that looks like. And
So I left First Christian Church about 7 years ago, just kind of with a passion to help churches experience what we experienced at First Christian. I feel like so much of our disability ministry wasn't like a masterful plan by myself, but more a blessing from God. And I just thought, you know, if there's ways that I can replicate what God did at First Christian and other churches, like that would be like the ultimate win for me professionally, I guess, in ministry. So I left First Christian. Became the president at Ability Ministry with the hope and dream of replicating some of the blessings that we experienced in other churches. And so that's primarily what we do. We create resources for churches. We offer free consultation for churches. I think for the people that come to us for consultations, I'd say it's about half and half. Half of it being a staff member that either is put in charge of disability ministry or is a disability ministry director. And the other half of people that come to us for help are those passionate moms that have a child with a disability that desperately want to see something started at their church that don't either A, they don't know where to start and they just need a little bit of help, or B, they've run into a roadblock and they don't know what to do next. So in those situations, one of the things that I try to coach churches or volunteer leaders that are trying to get stuff started is helping them to be able to speak in a language that church ministry leadership can hear and appreciate. Being on staff and, you know, going to Bible college, all that kind of stuff, there are certain metrics that church leaders appreciate and sometimes I think are slaves to. And that's you know, butts in the seats and dollars in the plates, attendance and offering, and everything surrounds those two things. So I try to coach people into how to paint a picture for church leadership to see the fact that this isn't a ministry that's a drain on the church. This is a ministry that can help grow the church. So we'll do things like census studies. So I'll be able to help churches or help these folks understand exactly how many people live in their community with a disability. One of the fun things that I've done is say, hey, what if, and this you know, happens maybe in larger cities or counties. I'll take the total disability population and I'll say to a church leader, say, hey, what if you were had a 99% failure rate and you only reached 1% of your entire disability community, and you still were able to grow your church by over 20% just reaching 1% of the disability community. So when you can find those numbers, and they're not like real hard to find, but I coach people into how to find numbers because pastors appreciate numbers. And then I try to come full circle with it and just say, hey, every number has a name. Every name has a story, and God's writing that story. And we have an opportunity, and really not only an opportunity, but we have a responsibility to enter into that and help those people, you know, find Jesus, you know. So we've actually created something called Why Our Church Should Start a Disability Ministry. That's the name of the research or resource, Why Our Church Should Start a Disability Ministry, that people can download. Again, it's free. We give away a ton of stuff for free at abilityministry.com, but they can download this resource. It's completely customizable, so they can take all their community data. We show people how to find it and how to plug it into a written handout and a PowerPoint presentation. So if we've got a passionate mom that wants to start a disability ministry, they're running into roadblocks, they can download this resource, plug in all the important information, hand the handout to the pastor and say, hey, I'd love to have 15 minutes of your time, show the PowerPoint presentation. It's 100% like super professional looking with all community numbers, you know, plugged into it, with not only community numbers, but commands from Jesus written in scripture that parents can use and say, hey, this isn't just a feel good ministry that we should do as a church. That's going to be a drain. It's not going to be a drain. It's actually something that Jesus commanded church leadership in his day to do. So,
yes.
If you want to go like the complete opposite side of it, you could say, us not doing any disability ministry is actually being disobedient to a direct command from the lips of Jesus. You can find that in Luke chapter 14 if you want to you know challenge me on that. So it's a great resource. Again, it's called Why Our Church Should Start a Disability Ministry. It's a free resource that parents, volunteers, staff members can download, plug in numbers, and take and present to their churches and just say, hey, we need this. Our community needs us. As much as the community needs it, we need it too, because it's a transformative thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. So tell me, what is the biggest objection you get from churches? I mean, obviously the ones that are reaching out to you, you probably have a better success rate with, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what?
By the time people are reaching out to us, obviously there's a recognition of
there's
the
something.
Need for something. And you always start small and grow from there, and that's fine. But the biggest excuses, I guess, that we've heard or run into are we don't have the resources for it, and resources being either financial or people resources. So that's an excuse that people give that I don't buy because if you've got one person in your church, you have a disability ministry. You know, you can have a viable disability ministry. So so resources being a big excuse. Another one that we have heard quite a bit is, well, we just don't feel called to it. And again, that's, you know, it's going against the scripture from Jesus. Another one that we hear is, you know, there's a big church down the road that's doing it really well. We just don't feel the need to do it because they're already doing it. I've got some objections to that as well. It's because not everybody wants to go to a big church. And again, we've worked with churches that have 20 people. We've worked with churches that have 20,000 people, and everywhere in between, you know, you need to have a disability ministry, and it looks different in every church, but you got to have something. You've got to talk through
something.
It, have a plan for something. I'd say those are excuses, resources. Somebody's doing it well, or we just don't feel called to it.
Yeah. And I guess I feel like I actually just did a training for Young Life the other day, not even a training because, you know, disability has been in the DNA of Young Life since the 80s and our staff believes in it, is that there becomes that mentality of, I don't have to have ownership over this because the church down the street is doing it and they're doing it well. So you can go to that church. And so, you know, I feel like that's where everyone has to have ownership. And so I don't know how you kind of fight that or problem solve through that. But I feel like more and more I'm hearing things like that from whether it's, you know, personal experiences for our family or from other families that it's like now these churches that don't have any intention of doing something for the disability community are like, oh, no, that church is doing it. We don't do it. And that's hard because, like you said, it just really comes down to the biblical call of you have to have ownership over every person that walks through those doors that has a disability. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the video I posted on Facebook, but we had an experience as a family recently where we were visiting a church and we got asked to leave in the middle of the service. I didn't call out the church. I didn't call out the pastor, but I felt very compelled that I have to share this story. And it was a painful, awful experience. I mean, awful. And it broke our hearts. And yet, as we dialogued with the pastor from that church that evening, you know, it was a lot of, so I know you came from this church, so what do you do with Kevin there? Yeah, and just trying to really figure out, like, we can't really accommodate this, you know? And it was very interesting to hear a pastor's perspective that really just didn't have a willingness at that time. Let's hope, you know, there's growth there. Dan and I offered to help in any way we could. But, you know, it was interesting. And as I posted this video, you know, the beautiful thing was I had a handful of pastors reach out to me personally and say, come to our church. We'd love to have you, which was awesome. But then the comments from the parents, and I realized how needed it was for me to share that experience. Not everyone likes to see and hear things like that in the church. I'll say that, and you probably would agree with that. But I felt like it was really necessary. But so many parents chimed in and just said, this is why we haven't stepped foot in a church in 10 years. Right. This was our story. And I made it a point to, you know, address each of those comments with the parents and just say, I'm so sorry. And I promise you that's not who Jesus is. You know, but one of the things Dan and I said to this pastor when we walked, you know, when we talked to him later that evening after we had got escorted out by one of the elders, you know, we said to him, like, what if we didn't have deep roots in Jesus? What if this was our first time saying we're going to try church? You know, what if you didn't have a way to figure out who it was that just got kicked out and get our phone number and text us and say, hey, can we talk? Like these are moments that we can't blow it. We can't blow it. You may never get a chance to redeem that with that family. So I guess, I don't know. I don't know if you have anything else to offer to that. But I would say for me, like, and I would say this too, I want to add one of my coworkers, and I appreciated this so much about him. He reached out to me and said, can you tell me the name of the church? Because I'd love to contact the pastor and tell him what he's missing by not including our friends with disabilities. And I was just like, no, I won't tell you, but but I love your heart. And I love that your boldness. And like, that's the key, is like, you're missing out, right? It's not, you have to do this because it's biblical, although that's true. It's, you're missing out. So again, if you have anything you want to share kind of about that experience, because I think I realized it's not uncommon. And I even heard that last year at Disability in the Church, you know, that big disability conference that I know you're speaking at this year, I'm speaking at, you know, they were saying how we, you know, don't always overtly kick people out. Sometimes it's not overtly that we're going up to someone and saying you need to leave, but there's other ways we do that. So I don't know. Again, if you have any thoughts or anything to share about that, but I'd also love for you to speak to how does a family find the church that their kid or their loved one can belong and they can be cared for? Because as you know, this isn't a lot of times just the person with the disability, especially when they're kids. It's the whole family, and there's a lot of unique challenges and needs.
Yeah, several different things there. The first thing I would just want to say to families is, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that it has to be the experience of anyone, especially at a church, to be rejected, to be disrespected, to be treated such a way. It's just, it's inexcusable. And I just want to apologize for anybody that's had that experience. And unfortunately, I've heard that story so many different times in so many different ways from families. And I just, as a church leader, someone that spends time on a church staff, like, I'm embarrassed. So I would just first apologize. Second, I would try to challenge, and I know this is hard when your heart is broken, and you kind of lose faith in church leadership, but I would just try to challenge people. Don't give up. Don't stop looking for a church that will love and accept you the way you deserve, because there are churches out there that will love and accept you for, you know, the way that you deserve. And there are leaders out there that get it. And the second thing I would say is don't give up, because churches do exist that will take care of your children. You know, if you've got a child with a disability, one of the things that we've done at Ability Ministry is we've created what's called a church locator tool. We have that on our website, so you can plug in your zip code and it'll pull up churches that have active disability ministries. So it might be that you've had a bad experience at one church and you're not aware that there's another church in your area that has disability ministry. I would encourage you to check that out. I know Key Ministry has a similar tool. I know the Tim Tebow Foundation has one that, you know, you can find any church that has a Night to Shine prom. That might be even a, you know, another way to look if you're willing to give a second chance, or, you know, to step out again, kind of put your heart on the line. I know that's difficult when you've been hurt, but yeah, I'd say, you know, go to abilityministry.com, go to Key Ministries website, go to, you know, the Tim Tebow Foundation, find a Night to Shine host church. The other thing I would say to families, and this is something that families have done back when I was doing ministry, was don't be afraid to interview the staff before you go. And again, I think that'll give you a real clear understanding of kind of where they're at. So I've had families that have said, wow, hey, we're interested in coming. We've heard good things, but we want to talk to you. And they have actually come to the church, talk to me, ask me questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask for a meeting. Ask questions that you have. Ask for a tour of the facility before you go. I know some churches are like that are really on the ball will have like a walkthrough video, like on their special needs ministry, yeah, like part of their website, but most churches don't. So don't be afraid, you know, to take a second chance. You know, obviously you can do that with a little bit of extra work, unfortunately, on your part, but to find that right church in your community. It's my prayer that as we continue to fill in churches, whether it be on our website, other you know, organizations on their website, is that every community will have a church that kind of stands out. You know, when Jesus talks about letting our light shine and being a city on a hill that can't be hidden, I like to think of that as like the special needs ministries, the churches that do disability ministry well. They're like the city on a hill that can't be hidden. They're out there. It's my prayer that, yes, that families will give a church a second chance, find a church that's doing it well, and some, maybe get brave enough to go and give it a chance.
Yeah. I love the thought of interviewing a church, like meeting with some staff ahead of time. I mean, I don't think I ever would have thought of that, but I mean, that's a great recommendation, you know, especially probably with maybe a kid or an adult with a disability who has, you know, autism and maybe has more behaviors or something. I think you get a little, what do I want to say? Even with Kevin, I feel like I have now this heightened awareness of like, oh my gosh, are we gonna, you know, get kicked out of somewhere or something, you know? So I could see like just tell me you're not going to kick us out or, you know, just, but I think, wow, that's such a great, yeah, just promise me that. No. But I think that's just awesome. Like, what a great, and almost like as much as that takes time and effort to do that, it's probably going to save potentially heartache or, you know, having to go visit multiple churches when you can just have thoughtful conversations ahead of time. But I also love the locator thing you referenced. I know I've looked at that multiple times, just, you know, just out of curiosity and stuff. So that's great, great recommendation for sure. Yeah. I guess just before we wrap up, because you've been so generous with your time and you do so much, you know, I know one of the things that you are really pushing for, and I love this, it affects our family personally, is this mission for the universal changing tables. And what is the name of your book again? The Shrinking Toilets? Or
The book we wrote is called The Tale of the Shrinking Toilets. And it's an allegory that teaches people what happens when the world becomes inaccessible because all the public restroom toilets shrink down to infant size. And so it's a fun way to open up a kind of an uncomfortable conversation. And it's one of the things that we're passionate about, that we're trying to champion. There are not many champions out there that are speaking up for the need for universal size changing tables. You know, the ADA law that you have to have an infant size changing table in all public restrooms, but infants with disabilities that have you know, needs to, you know, personal care needs, they don't stop having personal care needs when they outgrow the infant size table. So the world becomes inaccessible to them, to their families, to their loved ones. And so we're really passionate about that. We started a scholarship fund or a grant fund for churches or any, it doesn't have to be a church. You know, we've actually created or we've granted money to a public park wanted a universal size changing table. So it's not just for churches, but if you're interested in building one or purchasing one, we'll help you pay for it because that's how passionate we are about it. You can find details about that at shrinkingtoilets.com. So that's the website, you know, kind of tells you a little bit more about the book and what we do. But if you're interested in a grant to either build or purchase a universal size changing table for your church, business, or public place, look us up. We'd love to help you with that to make the world more accessible for everybody.
Yes. So, okay, kind of a silly question, but like how did you even become aware of that? Was that from the day program that you had people who had needs like that, that needed that, and you just realized it's not common out in the world? Or, I mean, usually that's something a caregiver, let's say, is like championing. So I'm trying to get the backstory on even that.
Yeah, maybe backstory on that would be, you know, when we started our disability ministry for kids, our Shine ministry back in the early to mid 2000s, you know, we had some kids that, you know, grew up, didn't stay kids and needed something. So at our new church, when our church moved, kind of mid 2000s, we had two family restrooms and we made sure that there's a adult size change table in both of the family restrooms at our church. And then obviously when we started the day program, was, you know, non-negotiable to have two more. So our church actually has four, and we have a Hoyer lift, down with where the day program is. It was one of those things that was just like something I never thought about. Again, me being an outsider in the world of disability, it was just it was a need that I became aware of just doing ministry, just saying, okay, a church can't, you know, a family can't come to church if they don't have one. You know, when nature calls, nature calls. And we want to treat everybody with dignity and respect. And you can't treat somebody with dignity and respect if you tell them they have to get changed on the floor in a bathroom, in a public bathroom, because that's disgusting.
Yes.
So,
yes. Let me tell you my hack. So, you know, we love Disney, right? So maybe you and I could tackle Disney and get Disney to be more accessible. So,
sure,
and they are accessible, but you know, you go to Disney World, right? And you go into any of the parks, Epcot, Magic Kingdom, and they have basically treatment rooms, you know, cots, kind of what you'd see in a doctor's office kind of tables that are great to be able to change someone. But that's at the front of the park. So, you know, if you're all the way at the back of the park, there's nothing, no universal size changing tables. So on a parents group, like a special needs to Disney Facebook group I'm a part of, someone started saying how they pack plastic tablecloths. Okay. Like you'd get at the dollar store. And that's what they lay on the bathroom floor to change their loved one in one of like the companion bathrooms at Disney World. And so that's what we do. Like when we're at Disney World and like having a good old time and you just, you know, you're like, I don't want to go all the way back up front, you know, to first aid. We literally pull out a plastic tablecloth and, you know, Dan and I lift Kev and put him on the floor and he has autism. And so half of our battle is like, Kev, don't lift up your head and then bang it onto the ceramic floor. You know, I mean, it's just, it's so not a good option, but it's like, this is what parents and caregivers are having to do is kind of critically think, you know, their way through how to provide that care when you're just trying to do normal everyday life or fun, you know, activities. Right. So, I was sharing that with some of my Disney friends and they were like, I think you need to try to get Disney to add some universal changing tables. So yeah, maybe we can advocate for that. Yeah. Or when I go down next time, I'll take some pictures of Kevin on the floor. Maybe that'll create
my goodness.
Some change,
yes.
But
yes, yes, yes. You know, you hate to have to take to social media, but
right,
yeah, that definitely would open some eyes of the need. So yeah, I appreciate one of the things I appreciate so much about families that have loved ones with different, you know, disabilities is just how innovative and persistent and how much, you have to be innovative because the world's not accessible. So unless you totally give up and, you know, you just kind of retreat, which is sometimes easy to do, unfortunately, you have to be innovative. You have to be that kind of that bulldog that's, you know, going to go out there and do whatever it takes. So I appreciate so much families like yours that choose not to retreat and choose to make it happen. So thank you to you. Thank you to Dan. Thank you to all the families out there that get out there and fight. And we just hope that, you know, at Ability Ministry, we can help you win some of those battles.
Yeah, no, it's such a great resource. It really is. And, you know, also, I just want to add that, you know, being in disability ministry, I know you have so much curriculum too on your website, which is huge. I know I'm always looking for like, what's our next Bible study going to be for our friends with disabilities? And so I know you've shared some of that. Some of it's free, some of it's, you know, there's a minimal expense with it, but that's huge because obviously our friends need curriculum that's tailored to them, and you've gone above and beyond just creating, I know, amazing content for them. So
yeah, thank you, appreciate that. Yeah, anybody that's interested in curriculum, we've got it for kids, we've got it for adults. Abilityministry.com, check it out, download a free sample, and give it a whirl. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, you've thought of everything, I'm convinced. I'm like sitting here
not quite,
but it's amazing. It's amazing. So okay, I know I said like 10 minutes ago we were going to wrap up, but I'm going to keep you for like 5 more minutes, but because I really want you to share about this. So you know, I know recently we're friends on Facebook, and anytime you post something always gets my attention. I'm always like, what can I learn from Ryan Wolf? But I know you posted recently just about this new, not new, because it sounds like you've been going through so much for a while, but it sounds like it's a little more finalized, more formal diagnoses. But you're kind of entering into the world of disability personally. And so I'd love for you to just maybe share about that and share what how you're processing that and what you're anticipating God to do through that.
Yeah, that's golly. You're right. It's been a while. It's been a process. Long and short of it, I guess, my body started breaking down physically, back in 2020, 2021, really, where it got to the point where I was having trouble walking. I had developed so many different injuries, as a result of running. I took up running in 2020. I'd never really run distance before, but we all had extra time in 2020. So I decided that I was going to get in the best shape of my life and run some races. So I ran like 1,100 miles in 2020. And apparently my body did not agree with that. I just had so many different injuries to the point where I had 6 major surgeries to kind of get, it was kind of like Humpty Dumpty trying to put me all back together after all these injuries. And I had a recent doctor's appointment with the third surgeon of the 6 surgeries. And she just said, she's like, there's really nothing more that we can do for you with a condition with my foot and some of my nerves to the point where I'm having difficulty walking. Like I don't take a step with my left foot without quite a bit of pain. And just to hear those words from the doctor, you know, there's nothing more we can do was, you know, pretty tough to swallow. And in my recent post, you know, I showed a picture of my blue handicap placard, and you know, that's, I guess that's you know, that's pretty good indicator that I've entered into the disability community on a personal level now, physically. You know, I'd only had the red kind of temporary placards before that, but just kind of a new reality for me, realizing that and this is something that I've taught people for years, is that if you live long enough, you're going to enter into the world of disability. It's not a matter of if, it's more a matter of when. For most of us, that becomes a physical or a cognitive disability. For me, it's physical. You know, so I struggle to walk. You know, being pain-free is probably not going to be a reality for me as long as I'm alive. So for me.
Yep.
A lot of it is, okay, this is my new reality.
Yep.
Am I going to practice what I've been preaching all these years, or not? You know, it's really all it is will I practice what I preach as I continue to attempt to lead in ministry as a, you know, as a husband, as a father, in my new reality. And, one of the things that I think I've drawn comfort from, and I'm by no means done processing this, I'll process it heavily, mm-hmm. probably for the rest of my life. But, yeah. One of the things that I've really drawn comfort from, is the story of Jacob, in the Old Testament when he wrestles with God. And obviously we don't have time to like go deep into the story, but, this is something that I've really never heard anyone teach on. And maybe I need to teach on it. Jacob, did not receive
yep.
his full blessing from God, did not step into the reality that God created for him until, this is heavy theological thing, until God made him physically disabled. He did not receive his blessing until after God in the wrestling match stuck his finger in his hip socket and wrenched his hip. And the Bible tells us that he walked with a limp every day of his life from that point forward. But it was at that point that he received his blessing. So his blessing and his walking into the reality that God wanted him for him, created for him, wasn't possible until mm-hmm. he entered into the world of disability. So that's where I'm trying to walk into, whether I'm limping like Jacob or not, is believing that God has a new reality, a new blessing, a new something, a new adventure mm-hmm. for me, and it couldn't take place until I personally entered into this world of of disability. Yep. So that's kind of where I'm at as far as processing goes. It's not to say that there haven't been many, many dark days, and there won't be many dark days moving forward. But that's kind of where I'm hanging out, is the fact that, you know, God caused this disability for Jacob, and it wasn't until that happened that he could receive his blessing. So that's what I'm believing on at the moment.
Yeah. Just a word of encouragement for you. Just, you know, again, being in this world for so long with between my dad and my kids, and we need to hear the good and the bad. We need to hear the good days when you're like, I know this is what, you know, this came from the Lord. This was ordained by God. But we also need to hear some of those dark days, and because that's the reality. You know, we're going to wrestle with these things this side of heaven, and always trying to understand, God, who are you in the midst of suffering, in the midst of disability? And so I would just encourage you, like, I know our community needs that. We need to hear how we work through those things, how we process those things. And I know you have such a amazing platform to get to do that. And so I know I look forward to learning from you in that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything we didn't cover that you'd want to share? I'm going to put your website and stuff in the show notes so people can reference that. But is there anything we didn't tackle or talk about that you want to mention?
One thing that we didn't mention, we covered quite a bit, and appreciate anybody that has listened all the way through this. But one thing that we didn't talk about is a stock photography website that we're working on. Called disabilityisbeautiful.com. We believe that people affected by disability are massively underrepresented in media. We believe in equal representation, and we believe that people with disabilities should be celebrated and should be seen. So that's why we created disabilityisbeautiful.com. It's a free stock photography website that features people exclusively with disabilities. And anybody that wants to upload their favorite photo of themselves or their favorite loved one, you know, photo of a loved one with a disability, can do so for free by creating a free profile on disabilityisbeautiful.com. So share your loved one with the world, or share yourself with the world. Who knows how far that could go to change people's perspectives on disability. So check it out.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, that's so cool. That's great. Especially, like you said, if you're making like handouts to give to your pastor about disability, like get one of those stock photos and put some people with disabilities. Like those visuals are awesome. Those are so, that's so
very
great.
Needed.
That's so cool. I'm going to upload some of Kevin soon and Court.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Yeah. Well, can I pray for you before we end?
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Okay, I would love to. All right, Jesus, thank you for Ryan. What a joy and gift it was to sit with him and just hear from him, learn from him. Thank you for the passions you've given him and his heart for the disability community from such a young age too, Lord. And I just thank you for all the things that he has just learned about and then invited others into and to get to be a part of, and the amazing changes that he's been able to create and the outcomes that that have been able to happen, God, from the day program to the guardianship. I mean, it's just remarkable, Lord. And so I thank you that you have used him, that you have just shown him how beautiful disability is and just aligned his heart with yours, Lord. And I pray for him on this new personal journey of disability. I pray for his family. And Lord, I pray that on the days that are hard, you would just carry him and show him your grace and your goodness and your faithfulness. And I pray that he would also just grow as a leader and as a someone that just leads in this community, Lord. I pray that that this would just change him in such a positive way, make him even more aware of the needs in this community and how to love people best with disabilities. So thank you for him. We love you, Jesus, and we thank you that you show us so clearly in your word your love and your care for this community, God. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The best first interview ever.
Well, good. Hopefully the bar's not too low.
No, this was perfect. Oh, you're such an encouragement. Like I said, everybody, I'll put the all of the things Ryan referenced in the show notes so you won't miss anything. I felt like I was wanting to like take notes while we were talking because there were so much good things that you shared. But yeah, again, thank you for your heart to serve and give and just create awareness. And God has just blessed you with so many amazing outcomes because of it. So thank you so much.
Very cool. Thank you. Appreciate being on with you.
Yes. Thank you everyone for listening and being with us. And I know it was a little bit of a long one, but it was so, so worth it. So I will see you guys next time on Invited In. Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to Invited In with Christine Boyle. Follow and subscribe, and please leave a review or rating. Visit ChristineBoyle.com to have Christine speak at your next event.